Clubland Online's live Clubland Q&A is just 1 minute away.
This is Mark Stein, back after four sellout voyages for the fifth annual Mark Stein Cruise. If you like the sound of April in Portugal and Spain on the fabulous new ship, the Celebrity Apex, well, you'll be at the apex of celebrity for our traditional week of sun, sea, and civilizational collapse. I'll have special guests from both sides of the Atlantic, including a reunion of all your favourite telly presenters from the glory days of GB News, who've since been sacked. And we'll do all the things you like about the Mark Stein Show and Stein Online, but close up and on water. More details at steinonline.com or marksteincruise.com.
The Stein Online Clubland Q&A begins right now. Here's Mark.
Hey, welcome along. October 9th, 2024. It is 3 p.m. in Florida, where Hurricane Milton is barreling toward the coast and will make landfall in the next few hours. 4 p.m. in the non-storm-tossed Canadian Maritimes, 4:30 p.m. in fabulous Newfoundland, and beyond the Americas, 8 p.m. in London, where the papers are touting former Foreign Secretary James Cleverly as the Tory leadership candidate with unstoppable momentum. Oh, wait, no, breaking news. He's just been knocked out. 9 p.m. in Paris, 10 p.m. in Jerusalem, 10:30 p.m. in Tehran. For all you Newfoundlanders who moved to Iran out of solidarity with the half-hour time zone, midnight 45 in Kathmandu. For all you Iranians who moved to Nepal to check out the quarter-hour time zone, 3 a.m. in Singapore and Honkers, 5 a.m. in Sydney and Melbourne, 7 a.m. in Auckland, and a rather more convivial hour for the kippers and kedgeri in His Majesty's Dominion across the Pacific, which I don't think Sir Keir Starmer has given away yet. On this day, 150 years ago, October 9th, 1874, the Treaty of Bern was signed in Switzerland, establishing the General Postal Union, now the Universal Postal Union, unifying national postal regulations to permit the unimpeded exchange of international mail. The signatories were the German Empire, Austria-Hungary, Belgium, Denmark, Egypt, Spain, the United States, France, the British Empire, Greece, Italy, Luxembourg, the Netherlands, Portugal, Romania, the Russian Empire, Serbia, the United Kingdoms of Sweden and Norway, Switzerland, and the Ottoman Empire. A lot of those entities no longer exist. How many of the ones that do still permit the free exchange of international mail? I do not know, but several of them, such as the United States, now examine and record every item of domestic mail, even if it's your kid sending a birthday card to grandma. And as several Stein Club members complained to me at my Hillsdale speech the other day, finding an email service that believes in the unimpeded delivery of disapproved email communications from, say, Stein Online, is increasingly difficult too. The last photocopier in the woods, battery operated, as it will be some months before power can be restored to counties that insist on voting against the narrative. Headline of the day from The Guardian. Because even lefty foreign newspapers have more actual news about America in them than is permitted in American newspapers. Quote, Guardian headline, we're still finding dead neighbors in North Carolina. We need help. Yeah, good luck with that. Where's Hurricane Dan Rather and his sou'wester wrapped around a lamppost when you need him? Okay, let's get to your questions. Kelly Harbison writes, sheltering in place in North Florida. Well, do look after yourself in North Florida there, Kelly. Even if I wasn't high and dry, Kelly continues, I have no place to evacuate to. A slightly more northern track would bring Hurricane Milton right into the town of Milton. FLA, as they used to say. I didn't know there was a town in Florida called Milton. I wonder if such a thing happening would lead to hurricanes no longer being named, only numbered. Well, there were who was the congresswoman from the Congressional Black Caucus a few years? I wrote I didn't write a column about it. I did a few cheap jokes about it. Lady from the Congressional Black Caucus complaining that hurricanes only had all these white bread names like Hurricane Nigel or whatever she was complaining about. And she seemed to think it was racist not to give authentic black names to meteorological phenomena that devastate your community, because that would really do wonders for racial relations in the United States. All I know, because I'm not really in hurricane country here, Kelly, I think this was the last hurricane to afflict seriously my part of New Hampshire, and everybody calls that the Hurricane of 38. So that's not Hurricane Nigel or Hurricane LaShawna, just the Hurricane of 38. Given that we've had two in the last 2 weeks, I don't know whether that system would work today. Do stay safe. Raymond Aldred writes, if a battalion of U.S. Army Corps of Engineers had been immediately sent to Asheville or any other hurricane-affected area, the recovery would have begun at once. Personnel, material, equipment, portable kitchens, shelter, temporary bridges, and many other services restored. Why were they not used? Everything listed is readily available, paid for, and professional. Well, because as I wrote on Monday, they chose not to deploy those assets. As I pointed out, I was talking about the Boxing Day tsunami, 2004. The government of the United States managed to get a carrier group to Banda Aceh, the totally destroyed capital of Aceh on the coast of Sumatra. Right. You can just take any old map of the world and see whether Sumatra is nearer to Washington than Asheville, North Carolina. They managed to get their carrier group over there in 4 days. And as I pointed out, once you've got guys who know what they're doing on the ground, as I said, the Aussies, the Royal Australian Air Force landed in within 48 hours. So did the Kiwis and Singapore. And this isn't any great secret that you have to spend days in a research library looking up. You can find it out. The Aussies were able to restore the water supply in Aceh within 10. They not only, well, here's the point I made in the piece. They not only restored it in 10 hours, they improved the quality of it because people had been boiling. It was just lousy water. Everybody boiled it. They brought a portable filtration thing with them. And so not only was the water restored within 10 hours, but you didn't have to boil it anymore. So they actually improved the quality of life. And what has happened here is that The choice, it's like the choice to deny, it's the government. And there, one accepts that there is a certain level of incompetence one can find when you're at the branch office of the branch office of the branch office of the regional branch office of the state office of the federal headquarters. One accepts that there's a bit of that that can happen. But this isn't. This is high-ranking figures in Washington choosing not to do anything for American citizens. Again, just to reprise that Guardian headline, because you won't be hearing it on CNN or NPR, you won't be seeing it in the New York Times or the Washington Post, because there is a corrupt media of court eunuchs anxious to facilitate the evildoers in war, which is what they are. They're evildoers. They've decided that it, because it will help them, because 26 of the 28 afflicted count. Here's the reason why the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is controlled by the executive branch, Raymond, here's why they haven't been deployed to North Carolina, because 26 of the 28 afflicted counties in the western part of that state voted for Trump. Guardian headline, we're still finding dead neighbors in North Carolina. We need help. Yeah, well, you should have thought about that before you voted for Trump. That's actually how these guys think. It's they have these internal numbers because there's an election coming up in 4 weeks, supposedly. In fact, people are voting now in various parts of the country. And in fact, it's a waste of time election because nobody thinks there's any dispute about how the state of California or the state of Vermont is going to vote. No one thinks there's any question about how the state of Wyoming is going to vote. So there's only six or seven states that matter. And one of them happens to be North Carolina and another happens to be Georgia. So if 26 of 28 afflicted counties voted for Trump, why should we be in such a hurry to restore electricity or water or patch up the road or put a temporary bridge where the washed out bridge used to be? That's how they think. People on the right I mentioned today a story about a Zimbabwean doctor whom I know only because she began following me on Twitter when we started covering and telling the stories of vaccine victims. And she had a contrarian view of what was going on, and they drove her to suicide. Last week, we told the story of a vaccine-injured guy in somewhere in, I think it was in the English Midlands. Was it in Worcestershire? And that poor guy couldn't get the lousy 120 grand. He's lost everything, and he couldn't get the lousy 100. And he was actually a pharmacist, and so he thought he ought to do the responsible thing and get the vaccine. And he wound up so badly injured by it that he killed himself. And the thing about it is, one death is a tragedy, as Stalin said, a million deaths is a statistic. And so you can tell the stories of a pharmacist driven to suicide, of a doctor in Zimbabwe driven to suicide. But when you have basically entire regions of the country just cut off and no one knows what's going on behind, you talk to your nice neighbors. You talk to all those women d'un certain âge who listen to Bugger All Considered on national public radio because they think it's a nice and civilized thing to do. The evil American media are not telling the stories of these people. It's quite ridiculous. Somebody actually said to Anderson Cooper's face on CNN the other night, if Trump or Bush were in office, you'd be there. You'd be doing the show from Western North Carolina. There's no reason why you can't do the show. I did shows from Ukraine, a very small amount. You need one guy with a small amount of equipment I forget the name of it, but even if you don't have Wi-Fi at the local Starbucks, because the local Starbucks has been destroyed, there's equipment you can get that CNN has when they're covering something horrible going on in Eastern Ukraine, and yet they can't. It's 400 miles from your stinking, lousy, evil capital city. And none of these network big shots are telling the story there. It's a choice. It's a choice. And okay, your neighbor who listens to Bugger All Considered on NPR, she seems like a nice lady. But by doing this, by just saying, nah, 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 can't hear you, there's a big humanitarian crisis in Tajikistan that I'm very concerned we're not doing enough about, you know, the government, the American government, no longer operates for the American people. That's not a unique situation. The Canadian government no longer operates for the Canadian people. I can go on. But there's no reason to be deluded about it. If they're happy to kill off dissenting doctors or vaccine victims one at a time, why do you think they'd suddenly be concerned about thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people in Trump voting counties in Western North Carolina? Stefan Buchek says, Mark, the political career of Chris Christie was doomed in part due to his cozying up to President Obama during Hurricane Sandy. That's true. I think he, didn't he embrace him or give him a John Kerry type Frenchman's kiss or something? When they met down there. Similarly, President Bush, 43, was ruthlessly criticized for his alleged indifference in his handling of Hurricane Katrina. Do you think that this administration's feckless response to Helene, in which federal aid to residents of North Carolina, a key swing state, has been at best late, if not largely invisible, going to hurt or even doom Democrat chances in this election? Well, as I said, I think they've made a calculation that keeping the chaos going in 26 Trump voting counties will deliver the state to them. Don't forget, this election in a land of, what is it officially, 330 million people? I would say that's probably closer to 350 million people. Was decided by, I think, 45,000 voters in key parts of key states last time round. So if you have I think it's an estimated 500,000 votes for Trump last time round in those counties, you don't need to lose a lot of them to actually deliver the state to the Democrats. And what was certainly true, I think, in this last year is that there are a lot of broken glass voters, as they call them. That's to say, people who would crawl over broken glass to vote for Trump. But if they can't get to the broken glass because there's a collapsed bridge and a washed out road that you got to crawl through before you get to the broken glass, it gets a lot more difficult. They're doing this deliberately. It doesn't matter whether they sincerely believe this or whether it's utterly cynical, but in everything they say, they think that their official position is that democracy is on the ballot, that Trump is Hitler. You can vote him in, but you won't be able to vote him out. It's not like a normal election. You know, it's not like you're up against George Bush Sr. or up against Gerald Ford or up against Eisenhower. You're up against the greatest threat to American democracy in the entire history of the Republic. That's what these guys say. So whether or not they believe it, They expect you to believe it. So why would they rush to restore communications, to restore access to the outside world, to people who are anxious to vote for the new Hitler? And if that means that certain people die, so be it. You know, all kinds of people have died in the last 4 years. You know, 12-year-old girls drop dead running around a sports field. We have huge increase in myocarditis in otherwise healthy young men of 28, 23, 17. They don't care about those guys being dead. Why would saving lives of Trump voters be a priority for them? And unfortunately, now we have extreme narrative control, not just from the government, but from the woke billionaires who control most. So if you think they keep using this, oh, most people now get their news from Facebook. Oh, really? Do you not remember what Facebook did in the last election? Why would you expect an honest election to be permitted on Facebook this time round? They're serious. They're serious. They have not acted as if nothing they say gives you any sense that they're willing to permit a free and fair election. And that includes the substitute candidate they've imposed on the party and imposed on half the country. She's a complete nitwit. She can't. She's a complete nitwit. She's basically doing some sort of roadshow version of that show from my old pal Armando Iannucci, Veep. She basically did that again today. She's staging a photo op in which she's being given advice by all the big shots at FEMA. And, of course, she's being fed questions by her minders. And she has to remind them, no. They can't actually say, oh, ask him, now ask him, blah, blah, blah. She goes, because we're doing this live. Can you feed me the next question? Oh, we're live! Scott Scherzer writes from Miami Beach. Hope you're bearing up there, Scott. Scott says, living in Florida these past 28 years has been a delight. My wife and I moved here from California, as even back in the 90s, we could see the direction the former Golden State was headed. Governor DeSantis is an excellent chief executive, and we keep our fingers crossed that he will wind up in the White House someday. Well, I'll say this, you know, Governor DeSantis was quite right to say he wasn't going to waste his time taking a call from Kamala because he'd already taken a call from the president, right? You remember the president? They used to put him up on TV once every few weeks to read a prompter. I haven't seen him in a couple of months now. But he's still apparently the president of the United States, supposedly. They had a big argument about that. All the January 6th guys are in jail because they disputed that he was the president. And then the Democrats caught up with the J6 guys and removed him. But he is still officially the president. And so he and DeSantis spoke, I think it was yesterday, and then she's going around whining, Kamala, that DeSantis isn't taking her call. And he pointed out that he'd spoken to the head of FEMA, he'd spoken to the head of the executive branch, and that Kamala isn't actually in the chain of command. And in fact, she's running as a Washington outsider. So by her own statements, she isn't in the chain of command. She's going to have an entirely new chain of command. So we've got one guy who's real. You know, he's real. He's doing a job. And the other one who is just doing this sort of lame roadshow tribute act version of Veep that is that is used to be the kind of thing that America did well. Plausibly faking stuff was an American art form in American politics. And this Montreal schoolgirl can't even do that. Anyway, I got a little distracted there. Scott continues, we've been lucky down here in South Florida as Hurricane Helene managed to pass us by, and it looks as though Milton will do the same. Our thoughts and prayers are with those to the north of us who aren't so fortunate. Yeah, that it's supposed to make landfall in the Tampa area. Kamala did another weird little thing today. She put out some video that she sounds as if she's having a nervous breakdown at having to do it. Very weird. Very weird. You know, say what you like about Joe Biden, but for a guy who was dead when he took the oath of office, he's managed to hang on for almost 4 years. I'm not so sure Kamala will succeed in doing that if she gets elected in a free and fair election. It's a shame, says Scott, that even severe weather events have become political footballs these days, to the extent that the federal government is involved in assisting states in dealing with natural disasters. Every state should be able to count on an immediate and adequate response, whether red or blue, that we have arrived at a time when any reasonable citizen is forced to contemplate the possibility that FEMA just isn't interested in saving the lives of southern white deplorables is disgusting. How much of what we have seen of the rescue effort in Western North Carolina do you think is incompetence as compared to malfeasance? Take good care and looking forward to April's cruise, says Scott. I don't think it's incompetence. I think it's deliberate. And the things that are going on, where, for example, a state senator from Tennessee reports that people arriving with chainsaws, you know, because here's the thing. If you're the last three houses on some dirt road in the woods and there happen to be trees down across what's left of the road, you're screwed if the last three houses belong to a spinster lady and a couple of her sisters or whatever. You need to have able-bodied guys to get rid of. So, guys, this is what we do when trees are down in New Hampshire. You know, the first guy to come up against the tree in the middle of the road gets out a chainsaw and removes it. You don't, but that depends, as I said, that depends on having able-bodied guys around. So these guys show up with chainsaws and FEMA agents confiscate the chainsaws. Now, it's not clear whether they have the legal authority to do that. They're not policemen as such. You know, there are all kinds of wacky rules in America. Like, apparently, I discovered this when I just parked. I was on my way to my father's funeral, and I was just parked on an interstate about, 10 miles south of the Quebec border. I was on my way to get a plane in Montreal. And some Border Patrol guy pulls up behind me with lights flashing and tells me I can't, you know, call. I was making a call in connection with my father's funeral. He says I can't do it. I go, well, wait a minute, you're the Border Patrol. The border's 10 miles north of here. And he said, oh, no, we have jurisdiction within 100 miles of the border. So in a small state like New Hampshire, that means that everywhere from the Quebec border down to the New Hampshire seacoast, that means the entire state, this bozo has jurisdiction. And I, nevertheless, granted that, I still do not know what jurisdiction a FEMA agent has to steal American citizens' property in North Carolina. And as I said, we've had credible reports of that. We have had credible video. Somebody mentioned this in the comments the other day, and I went to check it out, and there was a similar video from elsewhere of a Black Hawk, a helicopter, basically that was in a kind of no-fly zone where emergency supplies were being organized for delivery. And so this guy in this helicopter comes down and he rotor washes, as I believe they call it, the joint, which means he flies so low that the rotor blades cause all the, you know, they've got the tinned food and they've got the emergency basic pharmaceutical needs on another table. And I got something on this table. And he comes and hovers so low that it's all scattered all over the place. And I've now seen videos from different angles of that, which make it clear that whoever was in that helicopter was doing it deliberately. So you can't put that down to incompetence. You can't put down what they, you know, he was quite nice about Buttigieg Judge the other day, Elon Musk. But Elon Musk basically had to take to Twitter. The transportation secretary had said, oh, DM me and I'll give you my number. So Elon Musk did, and then he didn't get a response and all the rest of it, because Elon Musk was delivering these Starlink things that his guys were trying to deliver these Starlink things to reconnect people with the world. And the United States government was an obstruction to that. They want you dead, basically. They, you know, I know that sounds an extreme thing to say, but I think I'll tell you, things have gotten worse over the last 20 years. Back when I ran into my difficulties with the human rights commissions in Canada, Ezra Levant used a word to me that I hadn't heard before. He said their object is to denormalize you. And I didn't lie. I wrote a bit about it somewhere along the way. I didn't like the sound of it. That was the object, to denormalize you so that nobody cared what they did to you. Now, what's happened in recent years is way beyond denormalizing, because they've actually dehumanized you. So if you succeed in doing that, they've dehumanized half your fellow citizens. That's what they've done. And they've done it so effectively. If you do that on the scale that happened, and you can see it at all kinds of level, the idea, all this stuff like white privilege and white fragility and all, means that if you turn on this topic or to that topic or the other, the point is you've been dehumanized. And if you're dehumanized as effectively as half the country has been, why would anyone care whether you live or die? This is not attributable. As I said, as recently as 20 years ago, America rose to the occasion. So I don't suppose many Americans care about whether Sumatrans have potable water. But, you know, they were able to get to the other side of the world and do it. So there's not a competence question here. There's a choice. They've chosen not to do it. And that is extraordinary, really. David O'Neill writes, G'day, Mark. He's Australian, I think. That rather gives it away, I think. David O'Neill says, G'day. For once, I can listen to you live. We are in the USA, in Florida, of all places, just south of the danger zone. Our first visit to America has been a 4,000-mile bus trip from New York to Miami via New Hampshire, Quebec, Niagara, Washington, Nashville, New Orleans, Orlando, and countless other places we've heard of in songs and stories. I think if you've heard of New Hampshire in song, it could only be from my fabulous duet with Elizabeth Von Trapp, in which Elizabeth sings Moonlight in Vermont and I sing Ain't You Coming Back to Old New Hampshire. David says, it's an amazing country for sure. So green and so much water. I know we only see a tiny slice of the real America on a trip like this, but I've been struck by the lack of political signage for either side. I thought we would see blue and red posters everywhere, but we've barely seen a hint that there's an election looming. Is this an indication of indifference to the direction America is heading, or are we just not travelling in the right places? Well, that depends on where you go. Patrick Gagan says, hello, Mark. This kind of answers your question, I think. Patrick says, hello, Mark. I'd like to take a moment and comment on who's up 2 points in Pennsylvania. I live in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Yeah, I used to know that town quite well, Patrick. Although I couldn't say I do these days. But I used to go to the theatre occasionally there, or to concerts. Friends of mine used to be involved in things there. I live in Williamstown, but I drive a lot to Springfield, which is 2 hours away. Williamstown is a hotbed of leftists, so there are quite a bit of signs for Kamala here. But on the way to Springfield, I see a lot more Trump signs and flags than Kamala signs. This is in deep blue Massachusetts. I don't expect Trump to win this state, but the enthusiasm here is off the charts for Trump. There is a reason why all of a sudden they're doing this media blitz with Kamala the past few days. Do you think this is a good sign for Trump winning the election? Is enthusiasm an important metric in elections? P.S. I understand the margin of cheat. Well, back in the days when I did go to Williamstown and I was heading east of there to Springfield, I don't know which road you take, but heading back to New Hampshire, I always used to, what's it called? The Mohawk Trail. Brings you out on I-91, and then I'd head north up to New Hampshire. And yeah, you can, there are, no state is as blue or red as it's painted. And I certainly see, I think it, what's interesting to me is that in Vermont, say, which is like Massachusetts, there's no question that it's going to be voting for Kamala, but there's no enthusiasm for Kamala. So it sounds very much like what you have in Massachusetts, where in the Great Blue Redoubts, in Vermont, as in Massachusetts, very few Kamala signs. But then you drive out of town, I don't know whether you're on the Mohawk Trail or if you drive out of Burlington, Vermont, into rural Vermont, you do actually see a lot of Trump signs. I think one of the just to go back to the point that David O'Neill was making as an Australian, that he expected to see more signs. It used to be the case, as recently as a couple of election cycles ago, that it was an American phenomenon to see dueling yard signs, people putting them up, and generally people respected their neighbors' differing views on these things. So you could have, you know, going back to whenever, you could have a Bush and Clinton signs sitting opposite each other on the lawns of the street. But that isn't the case now. You know, people who have Trump bumper stickers on their cars report that somebody's coming along and then gets out their own car keys and scratches up the whole of one side of your car. So all that tolerance, again, it's part of the reason why people are dying in North Carolina, is that tolerance for other opinions has made people wary of displaying signs, and it comes from the left. That's simply a fact. And yet it's amazing to see, for example, the total lack of enthusiasm for Kamala, the lack of Kamala signs in Vermont, and these dogged Trump supporters putting up their Trumpy signs, because they're the ones the whole point of elections, the whole point of democracy is to make the losers accept the result so they don't then lob Molotov cocktails through your windows, which is what countries without responsible government is the situation they find themselves in. You know, if you want to protest some dictator, you can't vote him out, so you have to take to other methods. Well, what's happening in America, which is very disturbing, and partly to do with it's not because of Trump. It's because of the deep state's reaction to Trump and its institution of patently grotesque perversions of democracy, where non-citizens are the federal government goes to court. The so-called Biden administration goes to court to prevent states from removing non-citizens from the voters' roll. What you're doing there is you're giving the losers in the election no reason to accept the results. The whole point, I've written about this decades ago, the whole point of it's to bind the loser, to make the loser have buy-in to the result. Because he thinks the election's fair. He just came up a bit short. It was 49-51. He was on the losing end of that. But he knows it's a fair election. So in 3, 4, 5 years' time, he'll get another shot. Once you destroy that, as the evildoers of Washington have done, then, you know, logically, there isn't a lot left this side of civil war. That's just the bleak reality of what these awful people, this entitled permanent ruling class, has done to the country. This is Stein Online's weekly Clubland Q&A live around the planet. Oh, here's a guy you might be interested to hear from. Mark Stein is here to tell you all about our weekend music show. Hey, this is Mark Stein, back for another edition of On the Town. On this week's show, we have pigtails and freckles and Cypriots, plus eminent songwriters from Cole Porter and Johnny Mercer to Cat Stevens and Kris Kristofferson. And Frank Sinatra says his prayers. Mark Stein, On the Town, Saturday at 5 on Serenade Radio. And 5 p.m. London time is 6 p.m. in Western Europe, or 12 midday North American Eastern. Mark Stein live around the planet. It is 19 to 4 North American Eastern time. That's 19 to 9 British summer time. A little behind, a lot ahead, according to where you chance to be on this turbulent earth. And as I say, we are just a few hours away from the expected landfall of Hurricane Milton. If you'd like a break from who's up 2 points in Pennsylvania, as Patrick was talking about, our brand new Tale for Our Time aired last weekend. If you didn't catch it, it's by Jack London. It's super timely, super pertinent, and it's still available. You can find it at our Tales for Our Time homepage. Ellen Como writes, she actually walked to the first Mark Stein cruise, because very conveniently the cruise ship had docked right in her front yard. It was amazing. Ellen says, cher Monsieur Stein, chaleureuse salutation du Nouveau Brunswick. that means warm greetings from New Brunswick, if you non-francophones there. In fact, I wonder if Ellen has yet visited the Baie des Chaleurs, which doesn't actually live up to its name. But she says, no, not the French part of Nouveau Brunswick. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to get you pining for the Franco in New Brunswick, Ellen. No, not the French part, rather cottage country, a village I had never heard of before, since I have no family here. Beautiful, but no cruise ships nearby that I could just walk to from my home, unlike my previous dwelling. I must admit, shoot me a head scratcher. Oh, yeah. Shoot me a head scratcher has taken on a whole new meaning for me since the first assassination attempt on President Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania. Yeah, that's a bit of boilerplate I sort of reflexively do, because I get bored saying ask me a question 27 times. So by about the 21st time, just for variety, I say shoot me a head scratcher. But President Trump actually did get shot a head scratcher in Butler, Pennsylvania. I've often wondered how different the mainstream media's treatment of Trump would have been if he had decided to run as a Democrat. How do you think they would have spun all of his personal foibles and colorful personality? It's a good question, Ellen. He didn't have to run as a Republican. He was a guy who'd palled around with big-shot Democrats all his life because he was a New York businessman. So who are the powerful figures in New York? They're not Republicans, are they? So he's like palling around with 95 Democrats for every 5 Republicans. And I remember talking on the Mark Steyn show in 2016, not long after the election, and Linda Pearl, fabulous actress, she was Fonzie's girlfriend in Happy Days, and she was Matlock's daughter on Matlock and all the rest, and she was what's-his-name's girlfriend on The Office. Fabulous actress, and she's on the show, and we go for a spot of dinner afterwards, and she's been waiting, or I can sort of tell she's been waiting all day to ask me about this. And she wants to ask me about it because she's paralyzed with terror about the incoming Trump administration. And I said, I don't think you have to worry about it. He's an entirely non. He's not. This isn't like, Bush versus Gore. He's not an ideological figure like that. He's adopted certain. That's the complaint, basically, that all the people who wrecked the Republican Party were complaining that he's not a Ronald Reagan tribute act. No, he's not at all. He was a completely non-ideological figure. That's why if you'd gone through his Rolodex in 2015, there would have been far more Democrats in there than Republicans. And he could have run as a Democrat, except he concluded, I assume, that they weren't the kind of party who would be as whose establishment would be as vulnerable as the Republican establishment proved to be. If you went up against Hillary Clinton, she'd have you whacked. If you go up against Jeb Bush, he just curls into a fetal position, and when he emerges from that, he's just a bit whiny and passive-aggressive about everything. So there was a difference. But in terms of who he'd been for the previous best part of half a century, he would have been as comfortable in the Democrat primary. But as I said, the Democrat establishment would not permit that kind. He basically did he basically led the base's takeover of the Republican Party from the elite. And that's a lot harder to accomplish in the Democrat Party. But he must surely have learned to grow. He's getting shot at because this guy who they all got along swell with for decades, they went to each other's weddings. He went to Chelsea Clinton's wedding? Because, that's just the price of doing business in New York State. So it wasn't an ideological thing with him. He just wanted to help out his country. And he figured that he didn't care for either party in any committed ideological or coherent philosophical sense, but he just figured the Republican establishment were more self-evidently out of touch with their base than the Democrats were. And the price he's paid for that is that he's the new Hitler and people are shooting at him. So I suppose that's great. Kelly Walter says, Mark, I found that's a lot of Kellys on the show today. Is it a new thing? Anyway, Kelly Walter says, Mark, I found the Jack London tale for our time, The Unparalleled Invasion, absolutely chilling. Yeah, I just mentioned this a couple of moments ago. If you haven't yet heard it, it's right up there at the top on our Tales for Our Time homepage. It's one thing, says Kelly, to consider the possibility of us doing it to China, but devastating when they try to do it to us with their COVID attack. As a survivor of that frog-faced Fauci creeps bat flu, I don't find this stuff amusing anymore. Now on to more serious matters. I love the Mark Steyn theme song. Is there any place on your website where I can get a download of just the music without any narration? I would love to play this song on repeat as I watch our civilization collapse. Also, what are your thoughts on Michael Bublé and his efforts to preserve the American songbook? I don't recall you referencing him in your music shows. But then again, I often don't remember where I parked. You and me on that last one. Do you know, I had a little bit when I was having my heart attacks and so spending time in other countries on a long-term basis. I I'd be renting cars and I could not only never remember when I came out of a shop or whatever where I'd parked the car, but I couldn't even remember what the car looked like because it was just some boring rental car. Funnily enough, it's not one of the most serious things, but since the COVID, when you used to rent a car, you'd arrive at the airport or whatever and they'd offer you an upgrade. And after the COVID, they had such little inventory, they was instead offering me downgrades. So even if you'd picked a nice, memorable car, you wound up driving away in some, you know, crummy piece of junk. And I could never remember. I'd just be wandering around the streets, like pressing the key and hoping to spot some lights lighting up somewhere. At any rate, that's a side point. Okay, you wanted to know about the Mark Steyn Show theme song. That's a song called Nine Lives. Because we wanted which was written for my Cat album by Kevin Amos and me, because we wanted a big sum up song, and the theme of Nine Lives seemed the obvious one. And I thought, you know, someone's bound to have written one. And we went looking around, hunting down things like that, and we couldn't find anything. So as often happens, I just said to Kevin, to hell with it, let's write it ourselves. And I think it closes out the Cat album. We did several versions of it for the Steyn Show. As you know, there's a sort of 007 version, which we just did. I can't remember why, but there was some, we were doing a show with a sort of Bond-like theme or something, so we thought it would be fun to do that. And of course the intro and outro versions are different. That's something I learned from the Mary Tyler Moore Show, because the Mary Tyler Moore Show, whose theme tune Love Is All Around, it opens with a sort of rather gentle low-key what they used to call middle of the road type version, and then this is season one, I think I'm thinking of, and then season one they ended with a big swinging version, because the idea is that you're not at the same point as you were 28 minutes earlier. Something has happened. There has been some kind of narrative arc that has changed the emotional energy from, you know, the first minute of the show to the 29th minute of the show. And that was something I noticed, I thought was very clever. And so we had a different version for our intro and outro. And I, if memory serves, which it doesn't often, I think we've got a full length 3-minute one somewhere around that we did. Or maybe we just use that for a live thing or something. Anyway, I do believe such a version exists. And I don't know whether you want to have whatever it is. We've got 4, 5, or 6 different 30-second, 45-second, 1-minute versions, but I'll see if we can put up the longer one for you, Kelly. And thank you for noticing that. A lot of people like our Mark Steyn Show theme. I don't think anyone at CRTV did. Toby Pilling says, James Cleverly may have been too clever by half to progress in the contest to become leader of the Conservative Party. This is for the seven or eight of you who are interested after the result of, after 14 years of so-called Conservative government in the United Kingdom, delivered the most lopsided majority in 200 years in the Palace of Westminster for Sir Keir Starmer, who is a deeply disturbing and people say soft totalitarian. It's not that soft anymore. He's sending people to jail for disagreeing with the state lies. But in case you haven't noticed, and there's no reason why you should, the UK Conservative Party has been having a leadership election. And today was the day that the third leadership candidate, they do this round. It's a bit like Miss America, but with incredibly ugly people. And and I'm not too thrilled about the quality of recent Miss Americas, to be honest. That's a bit ungallant of me. I withdraw that. I preferred the overall vibe of the show in the 50s, 60s, 70s, whatever. I'm talking about Miss America, not the Tory party. Although now I think about it, I preferred the vibe of the Conservative Party. Oh, I'm just rambling into oblivion here. Toby! So they've been having these rounds where they're knocked out from 6 to 5 to 4 to 3. Today was the last of those. This is the sitting MP, so it's not a large electorate. And yesterday, James Cleverly came top in the top three. He was number one in the top three. And so the newspapers this morning published all these things in Fleet Street. James Cleverly is the coming man. He's unstoppable momentum. He's going to be the man who saves the Tory party. And then in today's elimination round, the coming man was gotten rid of. And so it's down to two. It's to down to Kemi and what's he called? Robert Jenrick. And that's not true. I had like 5 minutes of conversation with James Cleverly in the Macmillan Bar of the Carlton Club. One afternoon, actually. I don't know why, because I like ducking in there sort of between lunch and everyone arriving for pre-dinner drinks, because it's a quiet place. I used to go in there and have a sort of quiet think about this when I was doing the GB News show about what to do and all the rest of it. On that evening show, I'd just be sort of fine-tuning my thoughts. But he wandered in from the garden when I was in the bar, and we had a little chit-chat just in that way. I wasn't sort of too focused on who he was, and he just, you know, I don't know him and he doesn't know me, but he knew me as a guy who was on the telly, so he figured, oh, he's important enough for me to devote 5 minutes of my time. And his policies are not anything I think a British Conservative Party needs to be going anywhere near. You know, there's an urgency about what's happening, an urgency. So you have to move the meter more speedily than you've been doing. So all these people who are over gatekeeping, oh, you know, we can't go near those kind of people because we'll be portrayed as far right in the press, and we can't adopt that policy because soft remainers will, you know, we need someone who's able to move the meter, as Mrs. Thatcher and President Reagan did, so that policies that people thought of were crazy were moved into the mainstream of discussion. And that's happened in the wider world. If you look at the polling, you know, there's no support for open borders in America or Britain or Canada or anywhere else. The only problem is finding an electable political party that is willing to serve that huge constituency. The Brexit vote, summed up what the hell is wrong with democratic politics, because every single party in the United Kingdom, except the Brexit Party, was in favour of the European Union. What's the old Broadway line? Nobody likes it but the public. Well, the problem with the European Union was that everybody liked it but the public, so that it didn't matter whether you voted Conservative, whether you voted Labour, whether you voted for the Scottish National Party, whether you voted for the supposed Irish Republicans, the wankers of Sinn Féin, who want to leave the United Kingdom, even though they agree with every single one of its policies. So that actually summarised what there was no way to, even though a majority of the country wanted out, or even if you accept that it was a narrow victory and say, well, 50% want in and 50% want out, there was no one to vote for the 50% who wanted out. Democracy, they'd put themselves beyond a democratic resolution of that question, which is not a good thing. And we see it in all these, as I said, it's the same in Canada, it's the same in America when it comes to open borders. So somebody like James Cleverly, he was perfectly affable during our 3.5 minutes of conversation, but he's not going to do anything about that. And we need people now who can, I watched J.D. Vance, for example, and J.D. Vance was not going near. J.D. Vance had given some thought to what he needed to do in the debate. And as far as he was concerned, he wasn't going to do this and he wasn't going to mention that because he didn't want to frighten the horses. But he managed to find a way to make his points. And I suppose the best argument you could make for a fellow like James Cleverly is that he would be able, his sense of self-moderation would not scare potential centrist voters. But there's a difference. He was in office. He was Home Secretary, he was Foreign Secretary, and he did nothing. And I don't think any of these guys, there is no salvation for the Conservative Party in the people who presided over the last 14 years. So when Toby says, James Cleverly may have been too clever by half to become leader of the Conservative Party, but do you think that competition between the final two may thankfully drag the party rightwards? Answer no, because the problem right now is a division, not between left and right, but between the citizenry and the rulers, who are all, generally speaking, Sir Keir Starmer is just doing all the stuff the useless Tory wankers did, but a little more so. And that's true in an awful lot of countries. It's true in Australian politics. It's true in New Zealand politics. The difference is between this hideous, desiccated, cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all ruling elite and the masses who get nothing out of the uniparty policies. Chris Davis said, Chris, I mentioned this from time to time, but it should be said, Chris threw a party after the my day in the English High Court, whatever it was, 3 or 4 months ago. And it was just delightful. A lot of people there, people from the Mark Stein Club end of things, people from the GB News show end of things. It was just a lovely and delightful event, and I thank Chris for that very much. Chris says, Mark, we are in the grip of a mental health pandemic resulting from the governmental response in the developed world to COVID-19. My strong suspicion is that the tsunami of compliance with government diktat that accompanied the scamdemic has simply emboldened our so-called overlords to double down on their instincts to control the masses in all aspects of our lives. What say you? I say, as Peter Navarro would say, bingo. It was an exercise in control in what we would put up with. And what we put up with was quite a lot. We put up with the ruination of businesses that people had taken 20, 30, 40 years to build up. And then the government said, oh, sorry, no, you can't have a hair salon. It's not essential. Who's essential then? Oh, Jeff Bezos is essential, and Walmart's essential, and this guy's essential, and these Manhattan sex clubs where the public health guy from New York goes, that's essential. But you're not essential. Again, when we're talking about left-right, COVID really taught us the new division between so-called essential people and non-essential. So people put up with that. People put up with their... I mean, this was sort of close to home for me from one of the people who worked... One of the ladies who worked on the Mark Steyn Show. So you actually saw how... The deterioration in development in her kid, because suddenly he's a little kid. He doesn't understand why everybody's wearing masks, why he has to wear a mask. He doesn't know how to read the signals, to communicate in a masked world. He doesn't know whether somebody's smiling or scowling. We've damaged a generation of kids. These are all the kids who are going to be carjacking you in 10 years' time, the people who are damaged by this insanity. Then we have the literal physical damage to all these people who've got these turbo cancers and the myocarditis and the Guillain-Barré syndrome and all the other stuff. And yet, even... after all these years, the state, as I have learned in the English courts, the state is not going to permit any unwinding of the control narrative. You know, people will say, they'll genuflect in that direction in the interest of selling their book, like Boris is presently doing. But they're serious about holding the lid on what went on. The damage to fertility in women across the Western world. The health indicators of America, I really hope, you know, I would like Trump to put RFK Jr. In charge of this Make America Healthy Again, because again, the COVID years did nothing for the worsening health indicators of Americans. These are all... There's no argument about it. People say when you're on the wrong side of the climate issue, oh, but yes, but you're not a peer-reviewed person. Well, the peer-reviewed studies come out all the time now, and because COVID isn't on the news, nobody reports them. But they're only going in one direction, which is that governments, Western governments, screwed their own peoples on this. And it's absolutely disgraceful that they will... No, oh, yes, OK, well, that leader is retired now. So, well, wait a minute. Yeah, but the guys who are having the leadership contest to take over from him, they were all in on that too. You know, there has to be a reckoning for this. And I tell you what, I've just listed all the things that, you know, even Fauci says some of this stuff now. But... half your neighbours, maybe even more, would do it again. I still see, I can't bear it. I just can't bear that flight I took to Washington. The number of people on the plane wearing a mask. The people at the agents at the check-in desks wearing masks. He's hit the. They do it all over again, and they'd want, and they, and then they'd, oh yeah, yeah. Well, you don't have to worry about people wearing masks on planes because we're not going to let you on the plane without a mask. Actually, we're not going to let you on the plane unless you've had your 47th booster shot. And people would go along with it. And basically, what we've seen, the history of the last quarter century in Western nations, is some bad guys. What's it that Ilhan Omar says? Some guys did something on 9/11. Okay, are we going to kill the guys who did something? No, they're now in their 20th year at Gitmo, and we're trying to persuade them to cop a plea. But instead, we're going to do stuff to you so that you, the great bovine herd of freeborn citizens, will have to shuffle shoeless and semi-disrobed through the airport until the end of time. I said, I forget how many years ago now, it must be 15 years ago, something like that at least, the pitiful sight of a guy with a Don't Tread on Me t-shirt being trod on by the TSA at JFK or O'Hare or wherever, whichever lousy, rotten airport it was. Well, what happened since people put up with that? People put up with the TSA. People put up with you. The government couldn't stick it to the guys who want to blow us up. So they decided to stick it to you instead. Well, all that's happened is that since the COVID came along, we now have the TSA-ification of the rest of American life. And it's absolutely, it's people put up with it. That's the problem. Half the people want it. Half the people say, yes, 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 I'm willing to wear a mask till the end of time, just as I happily remove half my clothes at the airport till the end of time. People want it. People want it. And that is, unfortunately, a fact of life. A fact of life. Janet says, dear Mark, you were my favourite guest host when you sat in for Rush and Tucker, and I've always been a big fan. With your profound intelligence, incredibly broad and deep knowledge, and rapier wit, you impress me as a true Renaissance man, or Renaissance man, with a very old soul. So I was absolutely thrilled to have a chance to meet and speak with you for a few moments at the Hillsdale event a few weeks ago. My husband and I agreed that your speech on the politicization of American justice was the highlight of an overall superb event. My question for you arises from the contretemps that developed between Peter Navarro and Bradley Smith during their panel discussion on lawfare. That is whether we should fight leftists using their disgusting low tactics or only employ measures that don't violate our basic principles, even though that often results in our defeat. When I think about the vile things done to Dr. Snow and others, I'm sure we must fight fire with fire. But I would detest anyone who would drive another human being to suicide or even misery. Debates with myself as well as with other conservatives have never resulted in a satisfactory answer. I would love to hear your take on this dilemma. Thank you for all you've done and continue to do for human freedom and Western civilization, or as you like to call it, civilization, says Janet. For those who weren't there, Peter Navarro, this was the morning after my speech, Peter Navarro and Bradley Smith, who's an academic, but one with a foot in the real world, who's provides advice and influence to people mixed up in, you know, a lot of the lawfare, the Trump suits and things, and Peter Navarro. And so Bradley Smith was taking the principled high ground. And Peter Navarro strenuously objected to that. And I came down, I said this to Peter after his speech, I came down on Peter's side because right now, you know, the left is serious about power. So you're up against someone who's going to do what it takes to deny your side victory. That goes all the way to your possible death. That goes all the way to letting Trump walk out on an unsecured stage that those bastards in the filthy, corrupt Secret Service knew was non-secured and, in fact, had arranged to be non-secure. So it's not just that they're prepared to indict you and they're prepared to convict you and they're prepared to jail you. They're prepared to kill you. And the difference between Peter Navarro and Bradley Smith, I think, is simply because Peter's been in jail. It shrinks you. Just by actually being in these crappy American courthouses shrink you. You're a, as Peter said in his speech, if you'd asked him to do this event, you know, whatever it was, 3-4 years ago, he'd have said, oh, I'd be absolutely delighted. I'm going to be talking about China. I'm going to be talking about the global economy. No. Now you've been booked because the ruling party threw members of the opposition into jail. And I think that's the difference. And we tend to take with the trouble, it's why almost nothing, you know, at National Review is worth reading these days, because they assume we're in a world where normal politics is possible. And when you're putting Peter Navarro in jail, it's really not possible. Normal politics is not possible in America. You know, this is why I laugh at all the who's 2 points up in Pennsylvania. Because to be remotely interested in that, you have to assume that the ruling party is willing to let a free and fair election take place. And it isn't. That's why it's suing states to prevent them taking non-citizens off the voter rolls, which is incredible in a way. And I'm not even so, you know, I come from a Canadian can vote in a UK election because we're all subjects of the crown. So you can, and indeed on the continent, a German can vote in a French election because they're all members of the EU. But in the American situation, anybody, people who walked across the Rio Grande 3 days ago will be voting in your elections. So it's the corruption here is the corruption here is breathtaking. So this whole thing of that there are certain abstract principles, no. What's going on here is that your country is sliding off the cliff. Right? If you want to keep it on the cliff, just sitting, doing this David French routine, he's a particularly bad example, but he claims to be a conservative. Oh, yes, a conservative. Here am I twisting myself into a pretzel to explain why a society that permits drag queen story time for five-year-olds is really the height of civilization and liberty. Freedom is not abstract. It's where you live. So if you want to keep living there, having the, oh, yes, yes, and has David French said this? Yes, oh, yes, and slicing the breasts off middle school girls actually demonstrates our profound commitment to liberty. Has he been doing that yet? These guys will cost you your country. You have to be in the real world. Peter Navarro was in the real world. It got so real they threw him in jail. So it's not a question of, you know, oh, we should start driving our opponents to suicide too. There's a continuum between the wankery, I'm going to keep waving the Constitution, even as the judges twist the plain meaning of the language to discover the right to have little schoolgirls rendered infertile. I'm still going to keep waving the Constitution. Yes, drag queen story time is super constitutional. And the leftist urge, lust for power above all. You're going to have to move towards, because right now they're more real than the wankers waving a dead constitution. I've overrun So I got to get out of here. But the more I think about it, you know, we're not going to restore. If I had my way, I think I would like to have lived in the Jacksonian America that Tocqueville was tootling around, particularly in my own neck of the woods in New England. I'd like to have lived in that America. But, you know, the Jacksonian America has been gone a long time, and the perversions of the Constitution have been going on for a century, and the Constitution hasn't proved strong enough to resist them. And now half of America wants to elect two people for whom the Constitution means nothing, absolutely nothing, absolutely nothing. As Nancy Pelosi said, when somebody asked, where was it in the Constitution that permitted Obamacare? And she laughed and she said, you're joking, aren't you? That's the thing. The Constitution's a joke to them, to those guys. And the most difficult thing in the world is to go back. It's much easier to push forward into hell than to say, whoa, let's put the brakes on and let's not just break, but actually try and go back to what the Constitution means. So if America is to be saved, I think it's going to be saved with something else. I probably shouldn't say this for you Constitution waivers, but, you know, you listen to Tim Walz, you listen to Kamala Harris, that thing's dead to them. And half the country is going to vote for that. Mark Stein's Clubland Q&A, that'll do it for today. Do stick with us for our regular Thursday date at Stein Online with Laura's Links. Laura Rosen-Cohen will round up the internet as only she can. And if you're still toying with the pros and cons of joining the Mark Stein Club, come on in, the water's fine. And for the Stein shy chum in your life, there's a Mark Stein Club gift membership with his or her name on it. Stay safe, stay free.
Stein's Clubland Q&A is a production of Mark Stein Enterprises and Oak Hill Media. Rights reserved.